A Fremen stood on a dune in the distance, watching through oil-lens binoculars. A veteran Fedaiken in a weathered stillsuit, Akim had been studying sandworm migrations, one of the many scientific projects sponsored by Muad'Dib's School of Planetology. He was not certain how much longer this particular project would last, because it involved placing electronic tracking devices on the great worms of the deep desert, and the Kizaret criticized the practice, saying it tampered with the sacred domain of Shai Hulud. However, Kynes the Umma, the father of terraforming Dune, had been a scientist and highly admired, even revered among the tribes. Akim didn't care about the politics or the religious implications, which he considered to be minimal. Mostly he just liked an excuse to ride the great worms and spend extended periods of time in the open desert. He was one of the best worm riders on all of Dune, the winner of numerous races and other competitions at grand convocations, whenever the members of many tribes gathered. For nearly a month he'd been summoning the monsters with thumpers, riding them, and implanting electronic tracking devices between their armored segments. One worm after another. He wondered how many there were, and was sure that his fellow students in the School of Planetology could use his data to come up with an estimate. A short while ago, Akim had been afoot on the sands, heading toward a wrecked and apparently abandoned spice factory he had spotted on his travels. He walked desert fashion, taking care not to cause vibrations that might draw a worm. His mapping experience told him that the wreckage had once been atop a fortified shelter for the Emperor Muad'Dib, and thus he considered it a sacred and secret site. He intended to install a signal device there so that his comrades could confirm its geographic location. Dunes and spice sands in the Tanza Ruft had a curious way of shifting, of moving over time as if they were living creatures. But this site was in a stable area, sheltered among the rocks. While scrambling up a line of exposed rock that lay like the vertebrae of an enormous skeleton across the desert, he had gotten a view of the factory wreckage which lay like a beached beast up on the tumble of boulders and outcroppings, far from the open sands. That was how it had survived out here in the open for so long. He was surprised to see three people emerging from the decaying mound of machinery. Two women and a man. An ornithopter had landed nearby on the hardpan, and the women boarded it, surrounded by small whirlwinds of dust, while the man stayed behind in the abandoned spice factory. Akim hurried to get out his binoculars, but the oil lenses needed adjustment, and by the time he got them set, the aircraft was already airborne and flying away in a blur of articulated wings. With his spotter imager feature on the binoculars, he took pictures of the craft, though there were no identification markings. Smugglers, he thought. Pointing the oil lenses at the spice factory, he studied the man watching the thopter leave. He wore what looked like an old smuggler uniform, and his face was partially concealed by a stillsuit mask. Using the binoculars, Akim captured more images to add to his report. He had encountered plenty of spice smugglers out in the wilderness, hard but industrious men who refused to pay the imperial tariffs. Akim took care not to be seen, feeling some trepidation. There were likely to be more smugglers inside the bolt hole, probably using it as a base, and they would be armed, while he was just a lone researcher. Akim did not move. Presently, the red-headed smuggler went back inside. The Fremen waited. Just after sunset, he crept around the wreckage site and found another thopter, gray and unmarked like the other one, well camouflaged. The School of Planetology did not care about the movements of smugglers, but Regent Aaliyah would. He placed one of his spare worm-tracking devices on the undercarriage of the craft and concealed another signal unit on the derelict spice factory. Someone would surely be interested. In the falling darkness, Akim sprinted across a rock surface, down onto the flat and back up onto more rocks, climbing higher until he passed over a low ridge and dropped down into the open desert beyond. Safely out of view, he activated a thumper he had planted that afternoon and waited, listening to its rhythmic pounding noise. Presently, he saw an undulating subterranean motion out on the dunes, the approach of a great worm. With the ease of a lifetime of practice, Akim mounted the beast, dug in his maker hooks, and set them to guide the monster. He would ride all night and another day to reach Arakeen, taking his report back to the school. Ultimately, trust is a matter of perception and detection, of small and large things, parts that add up to a whole. In deciding whether or not to trust, judgment is usually visceral and rarely based on strict evidence. Duke Leto Atreides. Karthag, the second most populous city on Dune, had been called a pustule on the skin of the planet by planetologist Pardo Kynes. The former Harkonnen capital boasted a population of more than 2 million people, though such numbers were only estimates, because many of those who lived and worked in the city eluded census takers. Lady Jessica had her own reasons to dislike Karthag. Even after so many years, the Harkonnen stench still lingered, but she had agreed to this secret meeting. Besides, her news was good, and Bronso would be glad to hear that Tessia had been placed on a guild ship under an assumed name. By now she was on her way to Caladan, armed with the name of someone on the Atreides homeworld who would help her start a new life for herself under an assumed identity. Tessia was a strong woman, obviously damaged and scarred by tragedy, but greatly healed. She would have to relearn how to live as a normal person, but Caladan was the place for her to begin that effort. During their secret discussions out in the desert, Bronso had arranged the time and place for this meeting. Since then, though, Duncan and Gurney had recently returned with their supposedly triumphant news of progress with the Spacing Guild, which had imposed widespread crackdowns among the Waku stewards. Jessica just had to trust Gurney to do his best to delay the inevitable. After losing his Waku allies, Bronso would no longer have an effective method of distributing his material, but his ideas would not be silenced. Over the years, his constant questions and challenges to Muad'Dib's mythology had gained their own momentum. Other critics had taken up the effort as well, raising further questions and collecting additional data on the numerous atrocities. Many people were cautious, but others less timid. They had begun to write their own analyses, targeting the errors and the lack of objectivity in Irulan's reports, especially those that had been published since Paul's death. The die had been cast. At the appointed time in late afternoon, wearing nondescript clothes, Jessica rode a small, rickety taxi through one of the city's slums. With its narrow, cluttered streets and dilapidated buildings, Karthag had grown even more tarnished and tattered since the defeat of the Harkonnens. Her hood pulled forward to hide her face, she had removed her nose plugs to keep her senses alert. With her sense of smell, she searched the odors of the old city, absorbing her surroundings. Many of the stained, blocky buildings, architecturally simple prefab structures erected for Harkonnen and spice workers and the support industry, had grown like diseased organisms, patched and expanded with random and irregular sheets of metal and plaz. Dirty children played amidst junk and vermin. Making a snort of either disbelief or disapproval, the escort driver stopped the small taxi. "Your destination, ma'am." While driving her along, the man had studied her on the rear view screen, trying to see through the facade of her worn clothing and her serviceable but faded stillsuit, as if he sensed Jessica might be someone more important than she was letting on. "Watch out for yourself around here. Would you like me to stay with you? I could walk you wherever you need to go. No extra charge." "That's very generous of you, and gallant, but I can take care of myself." Her tone left no doubt that she could. She paid him a generous gratuity. Looking up, Jessica saw a 6-story building that might have toppled over from the weight of its decay, if not for adjacent structures propping it up. She stepped out onto broken pavement and walked along, seeming to ignore, yet intently aware of, shadowy figures lurking in doorways, watching her. Bronzo's instructions had told her to go through a metalloid gate on a side street. She pushed it open with a creak that sounded like a small, panicked scream, then climbed a plazcrete stairway to an upper level and turned right into a dark hallway. The odors of a poorly sealed body reclamation still oozed into the confined space. The Fremen believed that evil smells were bad omens. At the very least, this one showed sloppy water discipline. Before she could rap on a scarred door, it opened, and Bronzo rushed her inside, out of sight. He closed the door quickly.